Chapter 106. Veneration for his friend, Arabella had unaccountably and undutifully evinced the most determined antipathy to his person. And I think, said Mr. Ben Allen, in conclusion, I think there's a prior attachment. Have you any idea who the object of it might be? Asked Mr. Winkle, with great trepidation. Mr. Ben Allen seized the poker, flourished it in a warlike manner above his head, inflicted a savage blow on an imaginary skull, and wound up by saying, in a very expressive manner, that he only wished he could guess. That was all. I'd show him what I thought of him, said Mr. Ben Allen. And round went the poker again, more fiercely than before. All this was, of course, very soothing to the feelings of Mr. Winkle, who remained silent for a few minutes, but at length mustered up resolution to inquire whether Miss Allen was in Kent. No, said Mr. Ben Allen, laying aside the poker, and looking very cunning, I didn't think Wardle's exactly the place for a headstrong girl. So, as I am her natural protector and guardian, our parents being dead, I have brought her down into this part of the country, to spend a few months at an old aunt's, in a nice, dull, close place. I think that will cure her, my boy. If it doesn't, I'll take her abroad for a little while, and see what that'll do. The aunt's is in Bristol, is it? Faltered Mr. Winkle. No, not in Bristol, replied Mr. Ben Allen, jerking his thumb over his right shoulder, over that way down there. But, hush, here's Bob. Not a word, my dear friend, not a word. Short as this conversation was, it roused in Mr. Winkle the highest degree of excitement and anxiety. The suspected prior attachment rankled in his heart. Could he be the object of it? Could it be for him that the fair Arabella had looked scornfully on the sprightly Bob Sawyer, or had he a successful rival? He determined to see her, cost what it might, but here an insurmountable objection presented itself, for whether the explanatory over that way, and down there, of Mr. Ben Allen, meant 3 miles off, or 30, or 300, he could in no wise guess. But he had no opportunity of pondering over his love just then, for Bob Sawyer's return was the immediate precursor of the arrival of a meat pie from the baker's, of which that gentleman insisted on his staying to partake. The cloth was laid by an occasional charwoman, who officiated in the capacity of Mr. Bob Sawyer's housekeeper, and a third knife and fork having been borrowed from the mother of the boy in the gray livery, for Mr. Sawyer's domestic arrangements were as yet conducted on the limited scale, they sat down to dinner, the beer being served up, as Mr. Sawyer remarked, in its native pewter. After dinner, Mr. Bob Sawyer ordered in the largest mortar in the shop, and proceeded to brew a reeking jorum of rum punch there, stirring up and amalgamating the materials with a pestle in a very creditable and apothecary-like manner. Mr. Sawyer, being a bachelor, had only one tumbler in the house, which was assigned to Mr. Winkle as a compliment to the visitor, Mr. Ben Allen being accommodated with a funnel with a cork in the narrow end, and Bob Sawyer contented himself with one of those wide-lipped crystal vessels inscribed with a variety of cabalistic characters, in which chemists are wont to measure out their liquid drugs in compounding prescriptions. These preliminaries adjusted, the punch was tasted, and pronounced excellent, and it having been arranged, that Bob Sawyer and Ben Allen should be considered at liberty, to fill twice to Mr. Winkle's once, they started fair, with great satisfaction and good fellowship. There was no singing, because Mr. Bob Sawyer said it wouldn't look professional. But to make amends for this deprivation there was so much talking and laughing, that it might have been heard, and very likely was, at the end of the street. Which conversation materially lightened the hours, and improved the mind of Mr. Bob Sawyer's boy, who, instead of devoting the evening to his ordinary occupation of writing his name on the counter, and rubbing it out again, peeped through the glass door, and thus listened and looked on at the same time. The mirth of Mr. Bob Sawyer was rapidly ripening into the furious. Mr. Ben Allen was fast relapsing into the sentimental, and the punch had well nigh disappeared altogether, when the boy hastily running in, announced that a young woman had just come over, to say that Sawyer late Knockemurf was wanted directly, a couple of streets off. This broke up the party. Mr. Bob Sawyer, understanding the message, after some 20 repetitions, tied a wet cloth round his head to sober himself, and, having partially succeeded, put on his green spectacles and issued forth. Resisting all entreaties to stay till he came back, and finding it quite impossible to engage Mr. Ben Allen in any intelligible conversation on the subject nearest his heart, or indeed on any other, Mr. Winkle took his departure, and returned to the bush. The anxiety of his mind, and the numerous meditations which Arabella had awakened, prevented his share of the mortar of punch producing that effect upon him which it would have had under other circumstances. So, after taking a glass of soda water and brandy at the bar, he turned into the coffee room, dispirited rather than elevated by the occurrences of the evening. Sitting in front of the fire, with his back towards him, was a tallish gentleman in a greatcoat, the only other occupant of the room. It was rather a cool evening for the season of the year, and the gentleman drew his chair aside to afford the newcomer a sight of the fire. What were Mr. Winkle's feelings when, in doing so, he disclosed to view the face and figure of the vindictive and sanguinary Dowler? Mr. Winkle's first impulse was to give a violent pull at the nearest bell handle, but that unfortunately happened to be immediately behind Mr. Dowler's head. He had made one step towards it, before he checked himself. As he did so, Mr. Dowler very hastily drew back. Apostrophe Mr. Winkle, sir. Be calm. Don't strike me. I won't bear it. A blow. Never. Apostrophe said Mr. Dowler, looking meeker than Mr. Winkle had expected in a gentleman of his ferocity. A blow, sir? Apostrophe stammered Mr. Winkle. A blow, sir, apostrophe replied Dowler. Compose your feelings. Sit down. Hear me. Apostrophe, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Winkle, trembling from head to foot, before I consent to sit down beside, or opposite you, without the presence of a waiter, I must be secured by some further understanding. You used a threat against me last night, sir, a dreadful threat, sir. Apostrophe here Mr. Winkle turned very pale indeed, and stopped short. I did, apostrophe said Dowler, with a countenance almost as white as Mr. Winkle's. Circumstances were suspicious. They have been explained. I respect your bravery. Your feeling is upright. Conscious innocence. There's my hand. Grasp it. Apostrophe, really, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Winkle, hesitating whether to give his hand or not, and almost fearing that it was demanded in order that he might be taken at an advantage. Really, sir, I know what you mean, apostrophe interposed Dowler. You feel aggrieved. Very natural. So should one. I was wrong. I beg your pardon. Be friendly. Forgive me. Apostrophe with this, Dowler fairly forced his hand upon Mr. Winkle, and shaking it with the utmost vehemence, declared he was a fellow of extreme spirit, and he had a higher opinion of him than ever. Now, apostrophe said Dowler, sit down. Relate it all. How did you find me? When did you follow? Be frank. Tell me. Apostrophe, it's quite accidental, apostrophe replied Mr. Winkle, greatly perplexed by the curious and unexpected nature of the interview. Quite. Apostrophe, glad of it, apostrophe said Dowler. I woke this morning. I had forgotten my threat. I laughed at the accident. I felt friendly. I said so. Apostrophe, to whom? Apostrophe inquired Mr. Winkle. To Mrs. Dowler. You made a vow, said she. I did, said one. It was a rash one, said she. It was, said one. I'll apologize. Where is he? apostrophe, who? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Winkle. You, apostrophe, replied Dowler. I went downstairs. You were not to be found. Pickwick looked gloomy. Shook his head. Hoped no violence would be committed. I saw it all. You felt yourself insulted. You had gone, for a friend perhaps. Possibly for pistols. High spirit, said one. I admire him. Apostrophe, Mr. Winkle coughed, and beginning to see how the land lay, assumed a look of importance. I left a note for you, apostrophe, resumed Dowler. I said I was sorry. So I was. Pressing business called me here. You were not satisfied. You followed. You required a verbal explanation. You were right. It's all over now. My business is finished. I go back tomorrow. Join me. Apostrophe, as Dowler progressed in his explanation, Mr. Winkle's countenance grew more and more dignified. The mysterious nature of the commencement of their conversation was explained. Mr. Dowler had as great an objection to dueling as himself. In short, this blustering and awful personage was one of the most egregious cowards in existence, and interpreting Mr. Winkle's absence through the medium of his own fears, had taken the same step as himself, and prudently retired until all excitement of feeling should have subsided. As the real state of the case dawned upon Mr. Winkle's mind, he looked very terrible, and said he was perfectly satisfied. But at the same time, said so with an air that left Mr. Dowler no alternative but to infer that, if he had not been, something most horrible and destructive must inevitably have occurred. Mr. Dowler appeared to be impressed with a becoming sense of Mr. Winkle's magnanimity and condescension, and the two belligerents parted for the night, with many protestations of eternal friendship. About 12:30, when Mr. Winkle had been reveling some 20 minutes in the full luxury of his first sleep, he was suddenly awakened by a loud knocking at his chamber door, which, being repeated with increased vehemence, caused him to start up in bed, and inquire who was there, and what the matter was. Please, sir, here's a young man which says he must see you directly, apostrophe, responded the voice of the chambermaid. A young man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Winkle. No mistake about that ear, sir, apostrophe, replied another voice through the keyhole, and if that worry same interestin' young creeter ain't let in without delay, it's worry possible as his legs will enter afore his countenance. Apostrophe, the young man gave a gentle kick at one of the lower panels of the door, after he had given utterance to this hint, as if to add force and point to the remark. Is that you, Sam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Winkle, springing out of bed. Quite impossible to identify any gentleman with any degree of mental satisfaction, without looking at him, sir, apostrophe, replied the voice dogmatically. Mr. Winkle, not much doubting who the young man was, unlocked the door, which he had no sooner done than Mr. Samuel Weller entered with great precipitation, and carefully relocking it on the inside, deliberately put the key in his waistcoat pocket, and, after surveying Mr. Winkle from head to foot, said, You're a worry humorous young gentleman, you there, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what do you mean by this conduct, Sam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Winkle indignantly. Get out, sir, this instant. What do you mean, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what do I mean, apostrophe, retorted Sam. Come, sir, this is rather too rich, as the young lady said, when she remonstrated with the pastry cook, arter he'd sold her a pork pie as had got nothing but fat inside. What do I mean? Well, that ain't a bad un, that ain't. Apostrophe, unlock that door, and leave this room immediately, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Winkle. I shall leave this here room, sir, just precisely at the worry same moment as you leaves it, apostrophe, responded Sam, speaking in a forcible manner, and seating himself with perfect gravity. If I find it necessary to carry you away, pick a back, of course I shall leave it the least bit o' time possible afore you. but allow me to express a hope as you won't reduce me to extremities. In saying which, I merely quote what the nobleman said to the fractious Penwinkle. Then he volled come out of his shell by means of a pin, and he consequently began to be afeared that he should be obliged to crack him in the parlor door. Apostrophe at the end of this address, which was unusually lengthy for him, Mr. Weller planted his hands on his knees, and looked full in Mr. Winkle's face, with an expression of countenance which showed that he had not the remotest intention of being trifled with. "You're a amiably disposed young man, sir, I don't think," apostrophe resumed Mr. Weller, in a tone of moral reproof, "to go involving our precious governor in all sorts of antics, when he's made up his mind to go through everything for principle. You're far worse nor Dodson, sir, and as for Fogg, I consider him a born angel to you." Apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Weller, having accompanied this last sentiment with an emphatic slap on each knee, folded his arms with a look of great disgust, and threw himself back in his chair, as if awaiting the criminal's defense. "My good fellow," apostrophe said Mr. Winkle, extending his hand, his teeth chattering all the time he spoke, for he had been standing, during the whole of Mr. Weller's lecture, in his night gear, "my good fellow, I respect your attachment to my excellent friend, and I am very sorry indeed to have added to his causes for disquiet." "There, Sam, there," apostrophe, "well, apostrophe," said Sam, rather sulkily, but giving the proffered hand a respectful shake at the same time, "well, so you ought to be, and I am very glad to find you there. For, if I can help it, I won't have him put upon by nobody, and that's all about it." "Apostrophe, certainly not, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Winkle. "There. Now go to bed, Sam, and we'll talk further about this in the morning." "Apostrophe, I'm worry sorry," apostrophe said Sam, "but I can't go to bed." "Apostrophe, not go to bed." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," repeated Mr. Winkle. "No, apostrophe," said Sam, shaking his head. "Can't be done." "Apostrophe, you don't mean to say you're going back tonight, Sam?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," urged Mr. Winkle, greatly surprised. "Not unless you particularly wish it," apostrophe replied Sam, "but I mustn't leave this here room. The governor's orders was peremptory." "Apostrophe, nonsense, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Winkle, "I must stop here 2 or 3 days, and more than that, Sam, you must stop here too." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.